Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode LXXIV, Iron and Rust. With the passing of Marcus Aurelius, his son Commodus is made emperor. The 19-year-old youth had been raised knowing that the empire would be his to rule, and he spent his time doing what he pleased. The next 12 years under the reign of Commodus would be bloody and chaotic, and many historians believe it to mark the beginning of the end for the Roman Empire. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Commodus is the last emperor of a dynasty. He comes in as a very young emperor. He is represented as universally awful by our very hostile sources. And his reign is sometimes seen as the beginning of the end. In fact, a lot of historians have seen it as the long fall of the Roman Empire. Edward Gibbon starts with him, starts with really the death of Marcus Aurelius and in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire.
Why is it seen as that point then? Because Rome does consistently degrade as an empire. Its glory days are very much behind it.
Well, it's all, as we always see with the benefit of hindsight, in that the third century is going to be a succession of wars and short-lived emperors. So we're getting towards the end of the second century. It's not surprising that they locate the beginning of these problems in the late second century. But a lot of it is also connected in a way that we might not find an easy connection, but one we've seen really all the way along with ancient historians. It's connected to Commodus's decadence and moral degradation. So they see very strongly this connection between immorality and a loss of power. It doesn't really make sense if you think back to people like Caligula, who were clearly immoral, perhaps insane, acted in ways that were condemned by all of our sources, but that didn't end the Roman Empire. It still had a lot of building to go at that point. Nevertheless, this is a connection that's made by historians all the way up to and even beyond Edward Gibbon. This idea, I guess, that Commodus is so self-centered, so addicted to his own lusts and cruel ways and viciousness, that he's not paying attention to the Roman Empire, the Roman people, the Senate, the ruling that he should be doing. And that means everything starts to fall apart.
But Rome has come back from bad emperors before.
Exactly.
Commodus doesn't just neglect it. He actively contributes to trashing the place.
Yeah. He is not concerned with consolidating. And that would be probably okay at different times. I guess it's a combination of bad leadership and what has been left to him, which is not a great situation in the empire. That's Dio's line, that if Marcus had lived longer, he might have been able to sort out the northern frontier.
Yes.
But he didn't, so Commodus is left with it, and Commodus doesn't deal with that. And that's kind of his line with other parts of leadership as well. He's not interested in longevity for the empire, at least according to our sources. He's only interested in what he can do with power. Now, that's fine if everything else is sitting pretty and there are people who can take care of the problems of empire, the problems for Rome, the problems that might affect Roman power. But because there aren't, then that does mean that you need a strong leader.
Yeah.
So the rot that's coming from the top does start to descend down. But it doesn't automatically happen. It has to be the right circumstances.
Okay, so let's talk about day one then. I know, I'm sorry. I said last episode that that was the end of the Marcomannic Wars. Now can we finally end the Marcomannic Wars? Marcus Aurelius died while he was on campaign, while he was tying it up, while he was in the process of making two new provinces and finally putting an end to the Quadi and the Marcomanni and the various tribes and their arguments. But he's left that in the hands of Commodus now that Commodus is the emperor. So what does Commodus do in this situation?
He kind of just leaves it. He abandons it. He makes truces, which, you know, on one side, that's the end of warfare and you don't have to stay on campaign. That costs money and lives and so on. But we talked last time about possibly Marcus Aurelius' strategy being one that would have had more longevity. that he would have settled that region, at least for a time. Whereas making treaties with the warring parties is probably not going to last. That's what history should have told Commodus. But Commodus is only 19.
But it did kind of last, didn't it? For, you know, a good century or so, the problems to the north are not really problems.
It's something that is going to pop up later. I suppose it's seen by historians of that period as a sign that Commodus isn't interested in taking on difficult problems.
Mm.
He wants to make a treaty and walk away. He wants to be back in Rome. You could read that either way. Maybe it's a good thing to do in the short to middle term. It's probably not a good thing to do in the long term. Commodus's reign is book 73 of Dio, so he's ended book 72 with that magnificent quote about going from gold to rust and iron. And he starts book 73 by saying Commodus was 19 years old when his father died, leaving him many guardians, among whom were numbered the best men of the Senate. Mm. Should have been okay. But their suggestions and counsels Commodus rejected. And after making a truce with the barbarians, he rushed to Rome, for he hated all exertion and craved the comfortable life of the city. So Dio reads this very much in moral terms, that he didn't finish the project that his father started because he was too lazy, basically. And also, he's not taking advice from more experienced people. So this is a bad start from Dio's point of view. But of course, Dio is one of those people.
Commodus does kind of man up, gather some troops, go across the river, bash a few of the Marcomanni around the head, and then go just to say that he's done something, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he wants a triumph.
Yes.
That's what an emperor should have. So he needs to do a little bit of fighting. He does indeed celebrate a triumph, which is fairly magnificent and also notable according to the Historia Augusta. Now, remember, the Historia Augusta is pretty much the gossip mag of its time.
Mm.
But he gets his triumph in 180, very soon. He's just become emperor in 180.
Mm.
So it's just later the same year. And the Historia Augusta says he celebrated it with Sauteris, his debaucher, placed behind him in the chariot.
What's the word that it's using for debaucher?
The word in Latin is sub actor,
yeah,
which means someone acting beneath.
Debaucher comes from, I want to say, Burley's translation. Is there some other way that...
Well, debaucher is actually not a great translation for that, because sub actor suggests more that Commodus has debauched Sauteris.
Sure.
That he is the subordinate in this relationship. It's not that Roman emperors shouldn't have sexual relationship with all and sundry.
Mm.
They shouldn't be addicted to it, but no consistent point of view, certainly until we get to Christianity, that you should, as a man, remain loyal to your marriage. But it's what you do with that. You might have relationships with slaves and concubines and whatever, but actually putting them in your triumph, that's the wrong circumstance for them to be put on parade.
Right.
This is a military procession.
Yes.
This is somewhere where you show bravery and the people you've captured in warfare and what you've brought back, the spoils of war. It's not where you display your relationships and kissing your boyfriend in public.
Mm.
It's just completely inappropriate. He's misread what the triumph should be doing.
So that would have been scandal if it happened.
Yes, but look, the triumph is a good, what we call in scholarship, locus. It's a good place. It's a good situation for ancient historians and biographers to talk about what emperors do wrong. So they have triumphs for the wrong reasons, or they do strange things in their triumphs. So Caligula, remember, he displayed seashells. He said he'd had conquest over ocean, right, which is nonsense. Domitian had a fake triumph where, because he hadn't really conquered any Germans, he got Gauls to dress up as Germans to parade along. So the triumph is meant to be this parade of integrity and military glory. And if you do something deceitful in that or something inappropriate, it's like you've insulted Rome.
Even Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus had their children there with them, and that was unusual enough and notable enough for it to be commented on.
Yes, because they can't really be part of the military achievement. Mm. They haven't taken an active part in that. So it's kind of starting to involve things we're not used to. I mean, of course, the triumph evolves. This is doing something radical with it, and it's quite a conservative institution, I suppose.
So Commodus is now the emperor. How did he manage, bracket, question mark, close bracket, the Senate?
Well, badly.
So he's been left with a good Senate in place, I suppose.
He has. He's been left with a happy Senate, which is a rare thing during the imperial period, because Marcus treated them with respect. Marcus wasn't an emperor who was particularly interested in elevating himself. In fact, we've just been talking about triumphs. Mm. He was not particularly interested in having a triumph. He had to be persuaded into it. So he's somebody who's been popular with the Senate, and it's a shock to them, I think, that Commodus is not going to do that. Indeed, he seems to get immediately very frustrated and annoyed with the Senate and starts executing senators, which is always a sign that an emperor is going to be depicted as a bad emperor, because the sources are always written by senators.
Mm. We should in particular point out that Dio actually speaks from experience here, doesn't he?
This is the point at which Dio is actually alive and actively taking part in Roman politics, because he's a senator.
Mm.
He has been present at these situations, and he can start using the first person. Mm. Indeed, he does, and he points out to us in Book 73, Chapter 4, "I state these and subsequent facts not as hitherto on the account of others' reports, but from my own observation." This is a point at where he's an eyewitness.
Mm.
In a way, it means that you could argue it's more reliable. He was there. In another way, you could say he's directly affected by it. So
yes.
Anything that Commodus does which is anti-Senate, and Commodus does many things, you can't do much more than kill senators to be anti-Senate, means that Dio is kind of an unreliable witness because he's so antithetical towards Commodus. He hates him. Dio kind of represents Commodus as somebody really invidious. At the same time, he must have played along well enough to get through that reign.
What did Commodus do after he killed all these senators off?
Well, he starts putting his own people into the Senate in positions of power. He fills the court up with yes men.
Cronies, yeah.
Including Sauterus, the one he's having the affair with. So he's kind of mixing up public and private in a way that's not a good idea in Roman politics.
So why is he killing these senators, though? Is it just because he doesn't trust them because he was his father's men, or he's just enacting on personal...
It's very difficult to judge because our sources are so hostile. They all put it down to him being a bad character, not wanting this advice, wanting to be entirely independent. But I think you can psychoanalyze this to a certain extent, that yes, he wanted to be somebody different. Maybe he was sick of hearing how great Marcus was.
Yeah.
But also, he did have reason fairly early on, and it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. It seems that he was hostile to the Senate before this. But there is an assassination attempt fairly early on, and that might have put him, you know, on guard.
Yeah.
The assassination attempt could be a response to his antithetical position towards the Senate, or is his position towards the Senate, does it get worse as a result of this assassination attempt, and perhaps the sources are sort of throwing back this attitude to before that attempt?
Mm.
It's hard to tell.
He quickly comes upon the idea of accusing of treason and confiscating property. And that must be a good solution for him to fill Rome's coffers, which are pretty stretched at that point.
It's a solution we've had before with someone like Tiberius.
Yeah, but it's been gone a long time.
Yeah, and it's the mark of a bad emperor, supposedly, if you bring back informers and you start this process, as you say, of execution and confiscation. It's a bit of a desperate way of getting property. But of course, we have had these years and years of war and disease, and he is in a position where he needs to balance the books. It's a drastic way of doing it.
Mm.
It's not the action of a temperate emperor. It's somebody who wants to maintain their lifestyle and is going to do it by hook or by crook.
So let's talk about the first assassination attempt, which takes all of 2 years to happen. The dust has hardly settled. There's a few senators still alive, and there's an assassination attempt.
Yeah, and it involves members of his own family, Lucilla, his sister, and actually the sister who's in Gladiator.
She's the widow of Lucius Verus, a previous emperor, so she would have the title of Augusta.
Yes. Lucilla's reason for being involved in this, she's got a lot to lose because she's actually sister of the emperor. Mm. That seems like a good position. But apparently it's not as good a position as she wants, because she wants to be more important than Commodus's wife. Remember Crispina? And Crispina is being given a better seat at the games.
Right.
Which is not surprising. She's the empress now. So Lucilla is jealous of this and gets a bit annoyed. I don't think this can really have been the reason. She's married to an important senator now. She could be said to be somebody who would be on the senatorial side because of that.
Okay.
But we're told that her nose had been pushed out of joint. She has been Augusta and she's not really anymore. And along with a man with a great name of Umidius Quadratus, great name, make a plan. And traditionally, if you're going to murder an emperor, you need to get around the Praetorian prefect, or at least the Praetorian guard, because they're the emperor's bodyguard. All right, so they get, this is another great name, Praetorian prefect Tarutanus Paternus on side.
Mm.
They actually give the task of carrying it out to a member of the Pompeianus family, Claudius Pompeianus, who is Pompeianus's nephew, therefore Lucilla's nephew by marriage.
Okay.
And as Dio tells us, as Commodus was entering the hunting theatre, Claudius Pompeianus formed a plot against him. Thrusting out a sword in the narrow entrance, he said, "See, this is what the Senate has sent you." Okay, so the whole plot failed, probably because Pompeianus announced he was about to do it.
Too theatrical.
Yeah, much too theatrical if he'd just done it. I mean, not that I'm in favour of assassination, but this seems to be the reason that it failed, that he kind of gave himself away. And of course, that's disastrous because if he tells them this is what the Senate's up to, of course, Commodus is
going to take it out of the Senate.
He's going to kill off a lot more of the Senate.
Yeah.
And it became clear that Lucilla was involved. So she was sent off to Capri, which is not a bad place to be exiled to, but she was later killed.
Did Tiberius have a palace there?
He did, yes. Hey. He kind of self-imposed exile himself too. But Lucilla didn't get to live out a wonderful life there. She was actually killed later on. So Lucilla's husband, Pompeianus, somehow escaped. He must have been very wily. He retired from public life and apparently got away with it.
He claimed poor eyesight, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good way of getting out of things, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
But we get a lot of executions.
One person who turns up dead, though, and this seems to be like plot B, whereas plot A was kill Commodus. Plot B was killing Sartorius.
Mm.
That was successful.
So Sartorius was killed, but then post-mortem implicated in the conspiracy by the Praetorian prefect Tigidius Perennis. It's starting to seem like a really complicated everybody blames everybody else situation.
Mm.
It's back to the Julio-Claudian soap opera, really. He'd been killed by a freedman called Cleander, who had basically taken over Sauteris' position in the court. So we've also got this kind of domestic, horrible, bloody drama going on. At the same time, we've got widespread killings and executions, amongst whom probably innocent people were killed too.
So it's just a purge. It is a purge.
For
Commodus, it's just a purge of the Senate and the upper classes.
As Dio says, with perhaps a little bit of self-reflection going on, I should render my narrative very tedious were I to give a detailed report of all the persons put to death by Commodus, of all those whom he made away with as a result of false accusations or unjustified suspicions, or because of their conspicuous wealth, distinguished family, unusual learning, or some other point of excellence. So Dio's saying it's just an excuse to get rid of people, take their property away perhaps, people he's jealous of, people he just doesn't like the look of.
But all these really important people are being killed, and he says it's tedious if I go on and on and on about how many people were killed. It kind of gives you a bit of a sense of scale of how...
Yeah. It's a trope. It's a way of speaking that's used in literature when you've got a massive list.
Hmm.
Right? I will bore my reader if I really give you the number of these. But of course, as Dio's painfully aware and makes us aware, these are real people who are his contemporaries who have just been killed off.
Yes.
It's not surprising that he's so antagonistic towards Commodus. So, for example, he killed what Dio calls the two Quintili, Condianus and Maximus. And Dio tells us that this is because they are brilliant people. That's the reason. They had, as he puts it, a great reputation for learning, military skill, brotherly accord, and wealth. And their notable talents led to the suspicion that even if they were not planning any rebellion, they were nevertheless displeased with existing conditions. So this is in Dio, book 73, chapter 5, subchapter 3 to 4. And what he's suggesting here is that if you are a good person, you're suspicious to Commodus.
Mm.
All right, you need to be as evil as him, according to Dio, not to fall under suspicion. So because these two Quintili are so outstanding in terms of their skills and their brilliance, of course he's going to suspect them, or at least say that they're part of this conspiracy. And this is part of Dio showing that you didn't need to be part of this conspiracy to get caught up with it, that it is a purge. And it's quite moving, actually. He says, thus, even as they had lived together, so they died together, along with the son of one of them. So the whole family is being wiped out here. Except for this one guy, the son of Maximus, called Sextus Condianus. And there is a great story about him and how he escaped. Because, of course, he knows he has to escape, because Commodus is just going to wipe out the whole family. They're all under suspicion. Dio, in Book 73, Chapter 6, says that Sextus Condianus surpassed all others by reason of both his native ability and his training. And when he learnt the sentence of death had been pronounced against him too, basically he gets this little plot together for how he can fake his own death. And he did this by drinking the blood of a hare. Dio gives this interesting explanation. He was living in Syria at the time. I'm sure there were hares in other places too. After which he mounted a horse and purposely fell from it. Then, as he vomited the blood, which was supposed to be his own, he was taken up apparently on the point of death and was carried to his room. So he faked his death.
Yeah.
Then he has his body replaced with that of a ram.
Sure.
You can see how the confusion could happen there. The body of a man, the body of a ram. But that was placed in a coffin, so I guess it's for weight.
Yeah.
And it was burned. After this, constantly changing his appearance and clothing, he wandered about here and there. But when the story got about, for it was impossible it should remain hidden very long, diligent search was made for him high and low. Commodus is not going to let this go. Many were punished in his stead on account of their resemblance to him, and many too who were alleged to have shared his confidence or sheltered him somewhere. And still more persons who had perhaps never even seen him were deprived of their property. So actually, even though this is a great and funny story, a lot of people suffer for it.
Yeah.
And apparently people brought heads to Commodus and claimed that they were Sextus Condianus to get some kind of reward, presumably.
Sure.
So the hunt is on, but Dio tells us nobody knows whether he was captured or not. He seems to have made his escape by being very wily.
Still roaming the countryside to this day.
He could still be out there.
So, I mean, that kind of shows, you know, one, the extent you had to had to take to get away from Commodus during this time.
Yeah, he would search high and low throughout the empire for you if he decided he didn't like you.
And just, two, how far Commodus is going to kill people who don't really seem to have been involved in anything against him. It's just a really personal purge against the Senate class.
Dio, must always remember as part of that senatorial class, must have felt personally threatened by this.
Yeah.
But yes, he gives us very much the picture of somebody who will just take a dislike to you and wipe out your whole family, which is a terrifying thought.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. And you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in iTunes, and reviews are muchly appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I am at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, we outline why this mightn't be the period in history to think about joining the Roman Senate. But until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.